Chapter 11. Distraction and Inattention. Someone with ADHD is distractible, and often distraction combines with inattention. Sometimes I don't know which to blame, but it helps to understand the difference between these two behaviors and how they affect someone with ADHD. For me, distraction occurs when I should pay attention to one thing but get attracted to something else in my physical environment that is more engaging. For example, I attend a board meeting on Zoom, but find that one board member talks at length about an unrelated topic. I get distracted and read the email on my iPhone. Inattention is an internal event. I am still present at the board meeting, but my mind goes elsewhere. Often unaware that my mind is wandering, I think about what I will make for supper or what tasks I have to do after I leave the meeting. For someone observing me, distraction and inattention might seem the same. In both situations, I am not present for the discussion. When I struggle with distraction, the shinier, more attractive object pulls my attention away. With inattention, my mind wanders away to a thought, image, or memory. Something is said that creates an idea in my head. Someone mentions Hawaii, and an image appears in my head about vacationing in a sunny place. And soon, my mind wanders off in a million different directions, although I have never left my seat. Distraction has more to do with my physical environment and can vary with the situation. Imagine you are talking to me about the latest book you read, and I notice a ketchup stain on your sweater. I find it hard to focus on what you are saying because I wonder whether I should tell you. Once I notice my distraction, I might say, "Could you please repeat what you just said? I missed part of it." Depending on how well I know you, I might add, "because I was distracted by the stain on your sweater." Before I knew about my ADHD, I knew I could not talk to someone with the TV on at a normal volume in the background. The volume did not affect the other person's ability to be in conversation with me, but significantly affected my ability to stay focused. Terry Matlin, an ADHD coach, once described ADHD distractibility as trying to watch a TV show in a house with all the windows open and swarms of mosquitoes outside. You may be looking at the TV, but the mosquitoes distract your mind. Or, as often happens with someone with ADHD, I notice something in my environment that reminds me of something I meant to do earlier but forgot to do. I recently read a post on Pinterest that truly describes what a day was like for me before my diagnosis and I worked to improve my behavior. I decide to water my flower boxes. As I turn on the hose, I peer over at my car and decide to wash it. I get the car keys from the house and notice unopened mail on the table. I decide to read the mail before washing the car. I put the car keys on the table, put the junk mail in the recycling bin under the sink, and noticed that it was full. I decide to empty the trash, but think, why not pay the bills that came in the mail and put them in the mailbox when I take out the rubbish? I get my checkbook, but it's out of checks. I go upstairs to get extra checks and see dirty dishes on my desk. I bring them downstairs and put them in the dishwasher. On the counter above the dishwasher, I see the reading glasses I searched for yesterday. I decide to put my glasses near the computer so I will know where they are when I need them. Back at my desk, I notice the extra checks, which remind me to pay the bills. I bring the extra checks downstairs and see the TV remote peeking out from the newspapers on the kitchen table. I know I will want it later when watching TV, so I carry the remote into the family room. And on and on. My day goes quickly. At the end of the day, the flower boxes aren't watered, the car isn't washed, the bills aren't paid, I can't find my glasses when I want to read the newspaper, I don't remember where I put the remote, and I don't recall what I did with the car keys. I am genuinely baffled when I try to figure out why nothing was done today. I was busy all day, and I'm exhausted. Here's a perfect example that I am still not free of ADHD distractibility. As I typed this, Steve came to my office to ask why he has been waiting the last 20 minutes for me in the basement. He has finished fixing the exercise bicycle so that I can work out. Meanwhile, I came to the computer for information on the broken bicycle part and instead became preoccupied with the Pinterest article I just quoted. I laughed as I handed Steve the article, saying, "What this article describes is exactly what I've been doing. I started out searching for a bicycle part, and now I'm working on my memoir. I forgot about riding the exercise bike." In what circumstances would I be inattentive? Here's an example. You are talking to me about the latest book you read, going on, and I'm not interested. Without being aware of it, I stop listening to you and instead wonder about what I have to do later in the day. Your uninteresting blather pushed my mind away to think about other things. Does my mind wander to a magical place when I am inattentive? Do I have great thoughts? Not always, but sometimes my best ideas just pop into my head. I astonished a friend when I told her about a solution to a problem we had discussed that came to me while I was making supper. Usually, I don't think about anything special when inattentive. I might remind myself of things I need to do and work out the order to do them, or I might think about the weather. Inattention is like internet surfing, starting at one website and then 45 minutes later, having followed link after link, you are on a website on a different topic. Often, I wonder how I think about deer in our yard when I started out thinking about my friend in Australia. An image that might help you understand ADHD inattention is this. You are hiking on a hilly, rocky trail. Although signs along the way say, "It's important to stay on the trail," you meander among the grassy fields that border the trail, lost in your thoughts. Many people with ADHD need to keep their minds occupied. If they have nothing particular to think about, their fallback position is to worry. Worrying keeps our minds engaged, and that makes us feel alive. I eliminated worry years ago. Steve and I were leaving Allison for a few days to hike in the mountains of Malawi. And I stayed awake most of the night before we left, worrying about things to tell the babysitter. For the night's worry and loss of sleep, I thought of only one more thing to say to her. That cured me of worrying. If I fall into the trap and start churning the same thoughts repeatedly, I tell myself, "Stop. You've already thought about this, and there isn't anything new to think about it. It's a waste of time. Repeating the same thoughts makes you feel bad and doesn't solve anything." Another effective way to stop churning thoughts is to take 5 slow, deep breaths. While taking those breaths, slowly look at your surroundings. If after doing this, you continue to churn distressing thoughts, keep repeating the 5 breath routine until your mind has shaken free. When Steve has a faraway look in his eyes and I ask him what he is thinking, it amazes me that he says nothing. I say to myself, "That can't be true. How can you not be thinking of something? You just don't want to share your thoughts with me." Then I realize that even though it is difficult for me to believe, he is genuinely not thinking of anything. And that is what most people do when they sit around with contented looks on their faces. However, for me, it feels like I am always thinking. Too much thinking. That is why some people with ADHD have trouble falling asleep. They lie in bed, tired and ready to doze off, but cannot turn off their thoughts. Their minds are too full of thoughts. Usually, I'm tired by 11 p.m., but then ideas stimulate my mind and I'm wide awake. The drawback of being confined by COVID, retired, and no longer having a family to raise is that I have few things to think about. It was not my choice, but my life became smaller. I ponder other people's thoughts through reading, viewing webinars, and watching movies, but it's a poor substitute for the joy of juggling many ideas of my creation all day long. Yet the COVID confinement got me to write this book, which was a new and exciting challenge. I re-engaged with the ADHD community and updated my knowledge. I learned that children with inattentive ADHD were still underdiagnosed, and adults with inattentive ADHD were often incorrectly diagnosed. I decided to start a nonprofit organization with a mission to change that. The only way I persuaded myself, at 77 years old, to start the Inattentive ADHD Coalition was to ask myself, If not you, who? That convinced me to try. After 10 years of complete retirement, I now work about 30 hours a week, but who's counting, for the coalition. My mind is active. I have many ideas and am always thinking, which feels great. Another aspect of my ADHD is that I could not have two thoughts simultaneously. If I thought about one thing and then thought about something else, I focused on the second thing and forgot the first. John Rady, MD, an associate clinical professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and an internationally recognized expert in neuropsychiatry, says that the inability of adults with this disorder to maintain focus is a key factor in their not improving, even after getting medication. This is why ADHD coaching has become a recommended part of treatment. The coach keeps the client with ADHD focused on his goals, which is somewhat surprising when many ADHD coaches have ADHD themselves. Not sticking with something long enough to make a change rings true for me. Sometimes we shift focus to something more appealing because we lose interest in what we are doing. Other times we are interested and committed to our task, but we are called away to something else and forget to return to what we were committed to. The first time I had two thoughts at the same time, the novelty of it surprised me. After I started Ritalin, I was at work when visitors arrived for a facility tour. I told them I had to leave in 30 minutes to pick up my son at 3 p.m. In the past, I became engaged in giving the tour, and unnoticed, the minutes slipped by. But this day, after 30 minutes, I looked at my watch and told the visitors it was time for me to leave. I was pleasantly surprised and proud that I remembered my commitment. Interruptions make me lose my focus. When I cook, I need to be alone with no conversation. Even when Steve asks how he can help, I get irritated instead of pleased. I can't drive and talk at the same time. If I drive and engage in conversation, do not hold me responsible for where we end up. When I founded the nonprofit organization ADD Resources, we invited national authorities to give presentations. For one conference, I drove Dr. Daniel Amen, a psychiatrist, to the auditorium. I got engrossed in telling him about the challenges I had with Jackson. Dr. Amen startled me when he interrupted to ask, "Do you know where we are?" I looked around and sheepishly said, "No, I don't." This was before cell phones and Google Maps. Luckily, a colleague was waiting for us on an off-ramp. When I noticed his car, I breathed a sigh of relief and followed him to the auditorium. After that, whenever Dr. Amen mentioned in his presentations that he was reluctant to get into a car driven by someone with ADHD, I knew he had me in mind. Shortly after I married Steve, we moved from Boston to Seattle. During my first year there, I received 4 traffic tickets for moving violations, paid the fines, and the judge ordered me to attend driver education training. I joked, "It's true, Massachusetts has terrible drivers." But the actual truth was, I drove without paying attention. The tickets and fines created anxiety in me when I drove, which helped me to pay attention, but it was not a good solution. Since my first year in Seattle, I have backed into cars in parking lots numerous times. My inattention caused these accidents. Following one of my frequent car accidents, I called our insurance company to file a report. The agent turned on a recorder and asked a series of questions. What was the make of the other car? I don't know. Which car got to the intersection first? I did. How many people were in the other car? I'm not sure. Was there any damage? A bit of damage to her car, not much. Was anyone hurt? I don't think so. How fast were you driving? Not fast. I answered the questions poorly because I had not noticed what he asked about. My mind was probably on the song playing on the radio when the accident happened. When I was an ADHD coach, one client drove to see me from a town 13 miles away. She told me she could not remember anything about her drive-in. Inattentive! I refrained from asking her if she was engrossed in a song playing on the radio. Adults with ADHD often drive fast. they find this is the only way they can attend to their driving. New research about inattentive ADHD suggests that a slow processing speed often exists with this presentation, making me view a few of my challenges differently. It helped me understand why others laugh at a joke while I say, I don't get it. Years ago, I learned that there's a difference between hearing and listening. When you are hearing, your brain registers sound, while with listening, your brain comprehends what was said. Similarly, there's a difference between seeing and perceiving. With seeing, the brain notices something. With perceiving, the brain gives meaning to what is observed. With a slow processing speed, my brain does not perceive things quickly, and I believe it explains some of my crazy accidents. In 2006, I backed our recently purchased van into a truck parked in front of our house. Yes, I saw the truck when I got into the van, but my brain did not register its presence. What I told Steve in explaining the accident was, that truck isn't usually there. Our van, with less than 4,000 miles on it, required $4,500 of repairs and needed to be in the shop for 2 weeks. Steve suggested I increase my medication. Another time, I needed to get to the ski bus by 7 a.m., but was late. I saw the closed garage door, yet my brain did not register it. I got in the car, started it, and backed into the garage door. I could not open it as it was dented. I stayed home from skiing, and we purchased a new garage door. Another day, when late for work, I rushed out the front door and noticed that the boat trailer was attached to the van. I could not drive the van with the attached trailer, but since it took Steve, Charles, and Bruce to lift it off the hitch, I knew I needed help. I hurried next door, woke the neighbor boy, and asked him to help. I said, Peter, this will be difficult. It takes Dr. Hammer, Charles, and Bruce to get the trailer off the hitch. We crouched down and gave it everything we had. The trailer flew up in the air, light as a feather. Only then did my brain register that the boat was not on the trailer. Embarrassed, I said to Peter, the trailer is difficult to lift only when the boat is on it. Distraction and inattention are expensive problems. Besides damaging items, I have lost possessions because I didn't pay attention when I put them down. If I have something on my mind, I don't notice where I put things. My mind was occupied whenever we hosted conferences. I learned to wear a fanny pack to hold my camera, car keys, and conference receipts so I would not put them down and lose them. When I discover money in a coat pocket, I consider it a lucky day. My discovery makes up for my annoyance when I could not find the money weeks or months earlier. I recently wore a coat I had not worn in several months, and in a pocket I found a key I had given up for lost. The joy of discovery! Maybe I have too many coats. I do best with one purse, so perhaps I should have one coat. Bruce had an infection from an unknown source that traveled to his heart and damaged a valve. He had 2 open-heart surgeries, one in Tacoma and another a year later in Seattle, but he continued to have a hole in his heart. Our last resource was the Cleveland Clinic, a mecca for open-heart operations. I have hearing aids I rarely wear, but I wore them to Cleveland. I wanted to hear everything the physician said after Bruce's surgery. The Cleveland Clinic supports family members in various ways. Afternoon concerts in the lobby, incredible artwork throughout the hospital, and free massages. They sponsor a shuttle to the Cleveland Art Museum, well known for its fabulous collection. One afternoon, Steve and I toured the museum. I removed my hearing aids to wear their headset with the audio program. After leaving the museum, I realized I did not have my hearing aids. They were somewhere in the art museum, but I never found them. On a hike through the Cotswolds in England, I put my credit card and driver's license in my jeans pocket. During the hike, I pulled them out unawares and dropped them. They were not there when we finished the hike, and I did not know where they were. Why hadn't I taken care of my license and credit card? We planned to do the hike again the next day to search for them. That night, I called my son Charles in California and told him what had happened. He said a man from England posted to his wife's Facebook page that he found a credit card and license with the name Hammer and wondered if Charles's wife knew the owner. Charles gave me the man's name and phone number, and I called him. He lived an hour away from where we stayed. In the morning, we drove over and retrieved my possessions. For another vacation, Steve and I were eager to start a 2-week bike trip through southwest Wisconsin. We arrived at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport with our tandem bike and 2 panniers. Before leaving the airport, I hit the restroom. It was not until I was outside the airport that I wondered where I had left my fanny pack with blank checks, my driver's license, a credit card, and my digital camera. It was back in the restroom with no possibility of retrieving it. Security allows no one through without identification and a boarding pass. Steve had a credit card with him, but it was the same as the one in my fanny pack. If I canceled the card or put a hold on it, he could not use it. He had an American Express card, but we wondered if restaurants and hotels in Wisconsin accepted it. I thought my son at home could send me my passport so I would have an ID for the return flight. Then I worried, what if my passport gets lost in the mail? Although I had little hope of recovering my fanny pack and possessions, I went to the airport's Lost and Found and made a report. It was Friday afternoon, and Lost and Found was closed until Monday. I asked my credit card company to put a hold on the missing card. I called Lost and Found on Monday and was told someone had turned in my fanny pack. Can you imagine my delight? We made plans to pick up the fanny pack in 2 weeks when we returned to the airport. Steve called the credit card company to take the hold off the card. The agent asked the fatal question, "Do you have the card in your possession?" Steve answered truthfully that we did not. The agent said, "We can't remove the hold if the card is not in your possession." Yikes! We just made a colossal blunder. Desperation made me bold. I called back to say my husband misspoke. I got the agent who talked with Steve and told her the card was in our possession. She said, "I don't believe you. We have a recording of your husband telling us it wasn't." There was nothing we could do. We asked Lost and Found to send us the fanny pack overnight. I called the credit card company 2 days later to say the card was in my possession. A different agent, unaware of the recorded phone call, believed me. Despite our inauspicious start, it was a fantastic bicycle trip. Isn't there a saying about God and fools? The first known use of this expression was in Harper's Magazine in 1856, where an article stated, "A special providence watches over children, drunkards, and the United States. They make so many blunders and yet live through them. It must be they are cared for they take little care of themselves." It sounds like it was written with me in mind. How did I react to each loss? Disappointed, discouraged, diminished. I have learned that with treatment, disappointment and discouragement subside. It took longer to overcome my feelings of diminishment and shame. But one of Eleanor Roosevelt's famous quotes bolstered me. "No one can make you feel inferior without your consent." I focused on not putting myself down when I did not live up to my expectations, or what I thought were the expectations of others. I learned to accept myself, warts and all, which was easier once I had fewer warts to contend with. Now I have better control over my troublesome behaviors. I know how I come across to others and adjust my behavior accordingly. I know I am forgetful and prone to distraction, and I forgive myself. My disorder does not make me a lesser person. By learning about ADHD and being treated for it, I am all I was and have the potential to be even more. I am not a new model, but an improved one with increased self-confidence and self-esteem. I am improved, even though not ADHD-free. Life is a continuing adventure that I face with confidence and optimism. ADHD impairs people across the full range of intelligence. So, yes, highly intelligent people can and do have ADHD.